Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Everything is data driven on the farm. We get birth weights and weaning weights of our cattle. Everything's done on shoot side. So we are having to take data and bring it back to Pensacola to be able to put the data in.
This is Jacob Gilmore talking Friday during a conversation about rural broadband access. Jimmy Petronas was in town. Stephen Berry, County Commissioner District 5, was there. I know our other representatives would have been there had they not had to be in Tallahassee. But the basic focus of the conversation was how lack of rural broadband access, you know, in the ground landlines that can give you high-speed internet is affecting rural communities, rural students, rural employees, rural farmers. Basically, you know, what this is doing to us in Escambia County, among other places as well. You know, it's kind of funny. Jacob Gilmore went on to talk about, like, his mom, I guess, would have been there with him, but she was busy doing what? Well, agriculture stuff.
My mom normally would be here today, but he's at home trying to buy a cow online because it's in Tennessee. True story, the sale starts at 12 o'clock. So broadband is very, very important for the rural areas.
The way you do purchasing, the way you do data, the way you farm, even with GPS driving the tractors and data collection to maximize your farming ability. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you wouldn't think about technology mattering. But then if you don't have the access to good internet, because he says, look, they use a satellite-based internet, but in the rain. Does it ever rain where you are in Pensacola? In this area, do we ever get rain? He says it's, you know, it's unstable and unreliable in the rain. Jessica Conti was one of the people they were presenting. I think she was one of the authors of the essays that gotten given awards at the end. But she told a different slice of this story, the lack of rural broadband access.
It is, like they said earlier, hard on the Zoom calls because I do live on the north end of the county and our internet goes out at least once a day and it just is hard to get on the Zoom call and stay on. So I've spent a lot of time at our 4-H property in Molino sitting next to my cow as I wash it, trying to do my work because that's where we have the best internet. And it's kind of, my cow doesn't like it all the time because he gets mad, he doesn't have all the attention. But if I have to do my schoolwork and I have to get on a 4-H Zoom call, I'm just going to have a cow mooing background of it.
And by the way, it's kind of ironic or perfect example is that even at the I think they were at the extension office, the equestrian center, and they were having the splotchy little cutouts was because the internet signal wasn't going through entirely during the meeting. Scott Luth, who represents Florida West, the kind of the economic development arm here in the county.
Broadband connectivity is in some cases more important than roads. And so having the access and moving that direction is going to be critical. When you look at our partners, you know, like Charter and others, we understand it's a business model, you know, and obviously if it made business sense, we would already have broadband throughout the entire county. So having a private partnership and having those discussions is the only way we're going to get to a solution. And so I think that's what we're offering to do through Florida West. I know the county commissioners and many others is how do we sit at the table, make it financially affordable for everybody, including the providers, including the county. And that's what we think we need to look at moving forward.
So you've got a wide array of interests here, right? Students who can't get on their Zoom calls for school. You've got, employees who cannot connect to do the work that they need to do in the pandemic as they're remote. You've got farmers, people who do agriculture having trouble. You can't do security cameras because, you know, there's no internet access. There's no point in doing it. Jimmy Petronas was there. He says, 800,000 people in Florida do not have broadband access. This is a problem in Escambia County. 95% in the city do, but Escambia County, there's 14,000 people that don't have access, according to Marva Johnson with Charter. So here's the thing. I agree that it's a problem. The part you have to persuade me about is the who should pay for it. I mean, I agree that if you live in a rural area and you don't have broadband, especially like the north end of Escambia County, the northern two-thirds of Escambia County, terrible internet, terrible cell service, like all around just terrible in terms of technology. The question, though, is if that is a problem and if it is a necessity in the modern world for citizens to have the access, who should pay for it? Because remember, technology is not something that is provided by the government, right? We don't provide, I mean, the government provides roads and parks. It doesn't provide internet access. You have to pay for it, just like it doesn't provide TV service. You know, you have to either pay for it or you get it free over the air, you get free radio over the air, okay? But the government doesn't provide for it. They just license us. We have to still provide it, right? And then sell advertising to generate. There's got to be money coming in somehow. So the real question to me is not, is it important for the people who do not have it to have it? The question is, who should pay for it? Because, for example, if you live down at the end of a dirt road with three other people, we don't pave that road because it's not worth the taxpayers' money to pave a road for three people. But that's where we're at with in-the-ground digital broadband, is somebody's going to have to pay to get it there. It's never going to be cost-effective, as Scott Luth mentioned. If it were commercially valuable enough and people were willing to pay the amount of money that actually costs to sustain the infrastructure to bring the broadband to their homes, it would exist already. Companies aren't dumb. It's because they're looking out for profit that they don't provide this already. So then it's a question of public partnership and how much taxpayer money should go to get this middle mile, you know, this the broadband to the close to the neighborhood so that you can get it into the neighborhood itself, or not even the neighborhood, but just in the homes. And that's, I philosophically, I have a problem here. I'm not against, I'm very sympathetic to the plight of these folks, I am, but at the same time, there's a part of me that's very much like, you chose to live in a rural area, and it stinks, because now you find out that technology is hard to get to you, that's awful, but I'm not sure that everybody else should pay for that through taxes when you made a choice to live in a rural area. And is it interfering with farming? Yeah. Is it interfering enough that it justifies public funding? I don't know. So I'm not unwilling to be persuaded, but it feels like people moved at the end of a dirt road saying we want pavement now. And persuade me. You know, persuade me that it makes sense. Because I'm willing to be persuaded, but that's kind of my initial reaction, is I think it's terrible for these folks. I think there's lots of value, and I think it's not the kids' fault that they have to be on a Zoom call. And I think it's not the employees' fault who thought they were going to be able to drive to work and now they can't. I get all that. That's the part where you have to persuade me, is how much public funding should go into providing to remediate a situation made on the basis of people who chose to live far away from physical infrastructure. 717 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
Well, taking a look at Gulf Breeze Parkway, received a report that there was a disabled vehicle in the left-hand lane eastbound. This is by the Penn Air Federal Credit Union, causing delays. So we'll keep an eye on this. Use caution as you're commuting on eastbound Gulf Breeze Parkway. Gulf Breeze or Garcon Point Bridge northbound, a little slow going across the hump, but then clears up until you get around the area where the light is at the intersection of Avalon and Garcon Point Road. And then once you get around Mary Kitchens Road, it's delayed all the way to I-10. I-10, I-110 checking and cleared, but the front gate of Ineos Pensacola is still delayed around the fourth quarter barbershop. And Highway 90 starting to show some minor buildup going westbound across the Blackwater River into downtown Milton. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
You know, obviously, we just talked last hour with David Peden about homes. Prices are going up, up, up. They're not expected to go down anytime soon. And, you know, the question is, do you have a home for sale? Are you thinking about selling it? Are you wondering what you could get for it? Well, that's where Christine Leavenworth comes in. In fact, she says, look, I used to guarantee 30 days. If you and I agree about a price, and if your home qualifies, not all homes do, but if they do, if it qualifies and we agree about a price, I'll sell it in 30 days guaranteed. Now it's 14 days. About a month ago, she said, look, 14 days. And she says to me, Andrew, we sell them within 7 days. I mean, 1 day, 0 days, 2 days. You know, we get multiple offers sometimes in these homes. So guaranteeing 14 days is very easy. I never have to write the check. But if it happens, $5,000. So she says, I will sell your home within 14 days, or I'll write you a check for $5,000. To find out whether your home qualifies, to find out what kind of price she thinks that they can get for your home, give her a call. She and her team at Levin Rinke Realty, they can help you today. 723-9158. That's 723-9158. 722 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us. Got a couple of texts in here following up on our conversation about expanding rural broadband access for internet. A meeting that took place on Friday with the public and farmers and students and Stephen Berry and CFO Petronas were all in town. Somebody here texts in at 437-1620. It's a luxury for sure. Broadband access versus, for example, using the phone. I think in the North End, your access to digital stuff is terrible. I mean, I hear this from everybody. I'm not sure it's quite a luxury, but I'm sympathetic to the claim that it's a necessity in the modern era. But it's just a question of who's going to pay for it. Somebody else writes, I'm sure they have to do their research to find better internet services. They just have to pay more. That's the cost of living in a rural area. Somebody else texts me, I live at the end of a dirt road and I paid $2,000 plus for internet. And I said, I didn't know if that was a one-time fee and then a monthly thereafter. I assume that's the case, but that's still, can you imagine? That's a lot. Somebody else says, where else are they expected to farm in other rural areas? The extra cost of broadband can easily be treated like other necessary utilities, like electricity through government subsidies and shared payments by all customers on the grid. It stinks, but second and third order of effects of making rural customers solely pay for the infrastructure are higher costs of food for all anyway. That's a good concern. That's what I'm talking about is, what's the net benefit to all of us of providing expanded rural broadband access in terms of how much more productivity do we get out of people? How much more justice do you get in terms of students in a pandemic accessing their home? I mean, and it's not like you can solve it right now. The pandemic's probably going to be over before you get the solution in. But how much are we getting as a public out of the value of spending money, if we do, on expanding broadband to rural areas? No, I agree. That's definitely a concern. 437-1620, 437-1620. Somebody else says, Northern Santa Rosa County, same broadband issue. Technology changes in the future include 5G, SpaceX, right? And it's hard to invest in a VCR when there are DVD players coming. That's another concern is, do we invest in all this infrastructure and then the technology changes and we wasted our money on it? I don't know the answer. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. Mark?
U.S. health agencies calling for an immediate pause in using the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. Fear of blood clots. NBC News medical contributor Dr. Natalie Azar saying that's understandably a pretty scary headline for some people to be reading today.
In the vast majority of people, the benefit would far outweigh this risk. The problem is that we don't yet know how to identify somebody who would be at risk, other than to say that it appears to occur in younger people and more predominantly in female. Birth control, things like that could certainly play a part. We just don't know yet.
Six women developed blood clots a week or two after being vaccinated. One of them died. Minnesota mayor calling for the officer who killed Duante Wright to be fired. She's on leave right now after the police chief says Sunday's traffic stop shooting was accidental, saying the officer had intended to use her taser but pulled her gun instead.
I've watched this whole video. It's not much, the body cam video, but he was being arrested. He was handcuffed outside the car, and there was a warrant for his arrest. We don't know much about the warrant. The chief says it was a gross misdemeanor warrant. But
I believe
it was
a failure to appear warrant.
Is that what it was? Okay. So he was being arrested. It was all very amicable. They were putting the handcuffs on him, and she comes up, and then suddenly he tries to get back in the car quick, like, I'm going to get away kind of quick. And so the officers are trying to physically arrest him and get him back out of the car. She pulls her weapon, says, taser, 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 I'm going to tase you. He keeps resisting, and she shoots him one time. If you were going to use a gun, you would pull the trigger more than once, typically. And then immediately starts, oh, my God, I shot him, and it's awful. I mean, it's awful, but it looks to everything I see based on what the chief said in the video that this was just a horrible mistake. It's unbelievable. Mark, were you done? Do you have another one still?
I'm good.
Yeah. It's 726 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
Well, taking a look at Gulf Breeze Parkway, it does not appear to be delayed anymore in regards to this disabled vehicle in the left-hand lane eastbound. This was over in front of the Pennair Credit Union. We'll keep an eye on that, but I'm not seeing any delays now. Going northbound across Garcon Point Bridge, just a little slow moving, and then as you get through the toll plaza, expect it to still be slightly delayed trying to get to that light on Garcon Point Road at the intersection there. And then as you continue towards Mary Kitchens Road, it is delayed heading towards I-10, I-110, I-110 checking in clear. The front gate of NAS Pensacola is still delayed. Appears to be backed up around the area of Sunset Avenue and Highway 29 southbound in between 9 Mile and I-10, also showing signs of delays. In this report, it is brought to you by Christina Leavenworth with Levin Rinke Realty. Thinking about buying or selling your house? Don't waste another day. Contact Christina Leavenworth and the Leavenworth team today. I'm Davis Allen with Traffic on the Fives.
So there's kind of two philosophies of health, right? Philosophy number one is, you know, when you get really sick, you're running a fever, break a bone, something like that, you go see the doctor. Not a great approach. I mean, that's fine, but you want to do that preventative maintenance. You want to see your doctor routinely, get those regular checkups, you know, all this stuff. Well, it's the same thing with your car. And your body will self-heal. Your car will not self-heal. So you have a complex mechanical system that you know needs routine, regular maintenance and inspections. That's the way to think about your car. That's why Bobby Likas at Bobby Likas Auto Care, that's the way they want you to think, is come see us regularly, like at least get an annual inspection, and then we can prevent the big problems. We can make sure that you're getting the most out of your vehicle, you know, improve your gas mileage, all that kind of stuff. Just make sure it's running right, so you don't have the big inconvenience and the big cost of the big problem. So, Bobby Likas Auto Service on Davis Highway. I just went over there the other day for an oil change. Easy peasy, no problem. Real, you know, just great service, of course. If you need more information, go online to carclinicservice.com. Oh, kind of an interesting little side note. Mayor Robinson was featured in the New York Times over the weekend. Did you know that? Yeah, they wrote an article. Remember how he's not running for re-election, and now we have this speculation about who's going to be the next mayor? And he says it's just the pandemic and the national politics filtering down to us and all of these various things making it unpleasant to do the job that he really looked forward to doing kind of his whole life in public service. But he was actually one of the reference points in this New York Times article entitled "Drained by a Year of COVID, Many Mayors Head for the Exit," about mayors all over the nation who are calling it quits. And they referred to his reasons why. They didn't really quote him or interview him, as far as I can tell, just kind of a reference to him. But still kind of interesting that you're seeing this challenge kind of across the board of mayors saying, yeah, this is, I did not sign up for all of this.
I'm Jennifer Kishenko with Your Money Now. For the second year in a row, Facebook, no stranger to civil rights issues and controversies, is urging shareholders to vote against a resolution that calls for a human and civil rights expert on its board, citing the global company's role in the amplification of tensions that have led to genocide in places such as Myanmar and Ethiopia. Wealth management and shareholder advocacy group Arjuna Capital is proposing that Facebook install a board director with a high level of human and or civil rights expertise and experience, and is widely recognized as such. The Bountiful Company has filed for an initial public offering seeking to sell $100 million worth of shares. The maker and marketer of vitamins, supplements, and other wellness products is backed by private equity firm KKR. The company, which changed its name from Nature's Bounty in January, says it earned $54.3 million in the 3 months ended in December. On Wall Street, futures this morning are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Before we get to local things, I know this national story out of Brooklyn, Minnesota, with the officer and the taser has kind of, obviously, this is the big national story at the moment, especially coming in proximity to the Derek Chauvin trial geographically. And before we do anything else, I did want to just ask you a couple of quick questions about this so people can hear from our law enforcement experts. First question, when you hear, and maybe you've even seen the video, but when you hear the idea that somebody mistakenly shot a taser thinking that it was a gun, is that plausible in your mind?
I guess anything is plausible, but from a law enforcement perspective, and knowing how much we train and the location of the taser versus the location of the firearm, as you know, the firearm is actually on the strong hand of the gun, the hand that you use that we train with for a firearm. The taser is placed in usually in front of the belt or some a different area. The taser is, while some may think they look alike, they really, from a law enforcement perspective, they do not look that much alike. There's a lot of yellow in the taser. It's typically in the front. It's difficult for me to comprehend how a trained law enforcement officer can actually mistake those two.
And is it, I mean, is it possible that it was, I don't know, an older model or something that would feel and look more like a handgun? Because I know that, like, I think the PPD, if I'm not mistaken, uses ones that are, like, bright yellow, and they feel like a toy gun in your hand because they're so light. It doesn't seem like you could possibly make that mistake. And, as you say, the different orientation of it on the belt. But is there, like I said, is there older versions that were heavier and looked more like a gun, maybe, possibly?
I haven't looked at, well, there are some versions that are all black, but again, even those are a little bit smaller. I guess it would depend upon what your duty firearm is.
Okay.
From our standpoint at the sheriff's office, it doesn't look anything like it. It doesn't feel anything like it. It's not located in the same location as the belt.
Yeah.
And I would say even the decision on when to use it right then, I mean, it looks like the guy sitting in the car, he is resisting. But he's sitting in the car, and it seems kind of, it's not like someone was shooting at you, and you're just grabbing any weapon that you possibly can.
Like, so maybe the choice seemed premature to you to go to the taser, even if that was the intent.
Well, it seemed like you would have time to make sure that you get the right weapon. Again, you're not just trying to throw everything at somebody if they have a gun. I mean, I know that we were trained early on that even if we're writing a ticket and we have a, you know, old-fashioned ticket book, and then someone comes up with a gun, to throw the ticket book at them. Throw something at them so that they'll distract them at least and give you an opportunity to grab your weapon. So my point is, it seemed like there were more than one law enforcement officer there, and I can't comprehend how you can mistakenly get the taser. Obviously, it's possible. Because it happens, but it's difficult for me to understand considering the fact that how much we train and the differences that we see here locally.
Yeah, and that was kind of the other question I was going to ask you is, people will want to hear, you know, what is done in the training to prevent, if it was an honest mistake, or at least a mistake, whether honest is your own question, but, you know, what is done in training to prevent something like this from happening by mistake?
Yeah, and as I said, we do firearms training regularly, and we, again, so that it's second nature. You know what's grabbed, you know where to grab, for the duty weapon, because again, that's typically when you pull your weapon, that's to save your own life.
Yeah.
And that's how we train. We do not at the range experience grab, transition from the firearm to the taser on the same type of a training scenario. We just don't do it. We may well go from a taser to a firearm, but not the other way around. So I can't imagine them doing, I can't imagine that mistake. Obviously, it's a tragedy, and I don't know all the particulars. I saw just a brief video of it.
Sure.
I heard them yell taser, but again, there were more than one deputy there, or more than one law enforcement officer there, I should say. It's just difficult to comprehend considering the fact that how much training goes into the use of tasers and how much training goes into the use of the firearm.
No, that's fair. And that's helpful for me to put it all into context. So I always appreciate that. Turning here locally, over the weekend on Sunday, we had a shooting on Aaron Drive. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I can't tell you much. We get there and find out that a shooting had occurred. A little later on, we have a 22-year-old show up at Sacred Heart Hospital with a gunshot wound to the left side of his neck, in the shoulder area. The injuries do not appear to be life-threatening, but I can tell you that no one that seen, that witnessed the incident and the people that were involved in the incident given us any information. We don't know where the gun, apparently there was guns fired on from two different people, one apparently in defense, and then obviously this, the one that shot this person in the neck. But no one knows where any guns are. No one knows who anybody is. And that's the information we're getting.
Well, you know, that wall of silence of non-cooperation, as you and I have talked about many times, is a continuous challenge. Speaking of that, have you seen much progress yet? And I know it's a little bit early to ask, but still, you know, this close connection working on drugs and gang crimes with the Pensacola Police Department, has that produced a benefit yet?
I would say so. I mean, I think that whenever you start looking at these things, the people that work in narcotics, they work more of the longer-term investigations.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have them. We didn't partner up to go after, you know, marijuana. We partnered up so that we can utilize the resources of both agencies and our mid-level drug distributors and the drug traffickers. So yeah, what you'll see is on the larger scale, or the longer scale, at least, you'll see the impact probably a lot more as we move on.
All right, very good. We're talking to Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff. Sheriff, hang on for me for just one moment. Let me get a quick traffic on the fives with Davis Allen.
Taking a look at Garcon Point Bridge and Avalon, seeing delays. Avalon stretching from the bridge all the way up to I-10 northbound. Southbound showing some slight delays, backed up at the intersection of Avalon and Garcon Point Road, but the bridge itself checking in clear. Gulf Breeze Parkway eastbound appears to be checking in clear, and the front gate of NES Pensacola still showing delays, backed up around the Wings and Things sewing facility. Also, Highway 29 delayed in between 9 Mile and I-10. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Davis. Now back to Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, you know, you and I often talk about the odd, unexpected, weird things that deputies often encounter. You had a couple of different incidents where deputies encountered something that most people don't really think too much about in terms of making arrests, right?
Well, yeah. You know, we always talk about being careful, and in today's environment, with a lot of the opioid addiction and the heroin usage, we're cognizant of the fact that people have needles and that they're just nasty, to be honest. But in one case, a couple of days ago, we had two deputies that were struggling with a suspect, and ended up both deputies get what we call a needle stick from a syringe that the suspect's name is James Dickerson, was concealing when he was resisting arrest. So I know, you know, we talked a lot about having to struggle with suspects, and you know, many times people do not go peacefully, and we have to put our hands on them, and we have to effect those arrests. But whenever you you do so, and you prick your own finger, you prick your hand with the needle, the syringe that they had, they're concealing, that they don't let you know is there, it just makes you shake your head, because again, we don't know what's on that needle. Yeah. We don't know what type of exposure that would put our deputies, in danger of. It's just, again, it's indicative of the difficult job of law enforcement, and people don't consider that, very often. They consider a lot about how, people have guns and people rough fight and people, punch and kick and that sort of thing. But we also have the very real danger of potentially getting exposed to some kind of disease or whatever that was on these syringes.
Yeah, I mean, are the deputies okay? Do they know what was on the needle? That's my first concern. Are they okay?
Yeah, they're okay. We have a protocol in place. That they go to a medical facility. They make the report, of a job notice of a job injury, and then they'll be monitored. Obviously, the syringe itself is turned in as evidence. We'll double check that. And again, we'll continue to monitor them. It's just, the fact that it happened itself is just aggravates you.
I've seen some of the video and seen you guys doing searches and all that kind of stuff. And do you have any needles? But still, especially when you got to wrestle with somebody or fight them because they won't. Anyway, awful. Totally different question. But obviously, you know that your former boss, former Sheriff Morgan, has now declared that he's doing. He wants to run for the mayor of Pensacola. None of this is a surprise. But I did want to ask you if you wanted to make any comment about that endorsement, support. I mean, he's intending to be a politician. You are now a politician. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, again, we wish David Morgan well. Obviously, we worked together for 4 years that I was the chief deputy. I agree with you. This does not necessarily come as a surprise. I think that there will likely be others that will enter that race. I think that as the sitting sheriff of Escambia County, I think I'll just stay out of that. But again, because I anticipate some other people running, and I've been around a long time, I'd be surprised if some of the other people that decide to run are not friends of mine or certainly associates of mine. And I think that, a year and a half out, that's too early to make really any comments.
I understand. I'm not surprised by that answer, especially as you say, you're going to have to work with whoever winds up being the mayor, and many of them you're good friends with already. Last thing is that you were at the groundbreaking for the new Bellevue Library yesterday, right?
Yeah, you break ground, and then I think 1 year is the time frame And then 1 year, we'll probably be over there. While the sheriff's office does not, you know, we don't build libraries. I think that when you build a library or a resource center, I think that anything that aids in reading and literacy can also aid in, better employment. Better employment leads to lower crime. I think that that's just all part of the partnerships. That's part of the multi-pronged approach that we're going to take to not just fighting crime, but also to make our community a lot better. I went there. It's situated right across the street from the elementary school that I actually attended. I made some comments about it because there were some children there, third, fourth graders, that were helping us with the shovels. And, I guess got a little bit reminiscent about when I was a kid and what I would do when I was going to that school. It just brought back some memories, but also gives you a good feeling the fact that these kids may have or will have a library resource center that they can go waiting for someone to pick them up, or they can go to check out a book if they still do that now, or certainly have access to a resource.
Absolutely. And the library is one of those great, wonderful, safe places for kids' imagination and education, as you say, and future prospects. So it's good to see that coming on the west side. Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff, as always, Sheriff, thank you for the time. Thanks for what you do. We appreciate your work in keeping us all safer.
Join Claimology Thursday morning at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology will be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing the recent storms, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm, as well as inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions, so you'll know what you need before the next storm arrives.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Morning, 7:54, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
The FDA expected to detail why it wants to stop using the J&J single-dose COVID vaccine this morning. That comes after six women developed a rare blood clot 2 weeks after getting their shots. About 40 people facing charges after a second night of protesting in Minnesota. They're upset about Sunday's death of 20-year-old Dante Wright, shot during a traffic stop in Brooklyn Center. The mayor says the officer will face consequences.
I can only speculate as to, you know, what the officer was thinking in that moment. But what I do know is that, through the actions of the officer, this young man is dead.
The chief of police says the veteran officer who shot Wright meant to use her taser, not her gun. Looks like Uber could start delivering cannabis once federal regulations allow it. The CEO telling CNBC weed delivery would fit right in with the ride-sharing company's food and alcohol delivery options, and they'll absolutely consider it.
Like, that's totally cool, man.
Yeah. Dave's not here.
Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, you know, we've been discussing the shooting that happened in Minnesota, and as a result of that, we had a couple of sporting events that ended up being postponed, including the Minnesota Timberwolves basketball game and the Minnesota Twins and Minnesota Wild game, Wild Hockey, Twins baseball. All those games postponed as a result of what was happening. The Twins are going to continue playing baseball today. In football news, Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, is going to have a movie featured about him. Adam Sandler's production company, Happy Madison, is going to do a movie based on his 1 year not coaching in the NFL, because in 2012 was banned for a year due to the Bounty Gate issue. He coached his son's middle school football team during that time. So apparently there's a humorous tale there. They are going to make a movie about that one season. And also Julian Edelman announcing his retirement from the game of football, playing all 12 years of his career with the New England Patriots, won 3 Super Bowls, was an MVP of one of them. I'm Davis Allen with your quick shot, now rolling this into your traffic, because we do have delays on Avalon Boulevard, basically stretching from when you get off the bridge all the way up to I-10 northbound. Southbound, though, we are seeing delays backed up due to the light over at Garcon Point Road in Avalon, but once you get through there, it checks and clear the rest of the way to Gulf Breeze. I-10, I-110, checking in clear, although I am noticing some delays. Olive Road really delayed, actually, backed up all the way to Cody Lane eastbound, heading towards Davis Highway, and Highway 29 delayed between 9 Mile and I-10, and even the Causeway, Highway 90 southbound, getting into 9 Mile Road, showing delays at that light near Scenic Highway. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Okay, and Davis, I just have to admit this for a second. You were telling the story about Minnesota canceling the Wild game, and you mentioned it was hockey, and my first response was, there is one? And I was looking through the NHL teams because I do not follow hockey at all. And I'm like, yep, yep, Winnipeg Jets, nope. Never heard of them. It's just my own ignorance, and I don't want to hide it, you know, to pretend I know. The Florida Panthers, yeah, sure. Detroit Red Wings, obviously. But some of these, I'm like, nope. No, I never heard of them ever in my entire life. Is that okay? Can you forgive me for not knowing hockey?
We'll get through.
We'll pass on that one.